Morning. Welcome to week two of this mini-series. Just to remind everyone, we've got another 2 weeks besides today, and then we finish for the break, for the break for the summer. So just a quick review from last week. We're working through this 11th century, 12th century nuggets of wisdom called Mifkar HaPninim. A book that has 17 gates, as we call it, 17 chapters on different character traits. And last week we quoted some of the quotes and developed some of the ideas around anava, which means humility. We explained humility is a strength, not a weakness. It needs to come from a strength. It's about being focused on what's moral, what's good, what's for the greater good, what's ethical, rather than self-protection and self-preservation. That's sort of how we summed it up. And the author of their book, he referred to it as the Keren of wisdom. Keren, we said, three different interpretations. Either it's the brand of someone who's wise, like the Pirkei Avot says that who's a wise person is able to put himself to a side and learn from everyone, even those that are lower than him. Also, Keren means it's the strength of relationships, healthy and wise relationships, winning people over in a productive way. And also Keren meaning it's a permanent thing, it's a permanent state of mind. It's not just one thing you do once in a while. Humility is something we aspire to actually live in with a particular perspective and live in a certain way. And one of the and he said that after every conflict comes regret, after every humility comes peace, because we explained at length last week how strong humility is related to resolving conflict and not strengthening and empowering a conflict and so on and so forth. We also explained that humility is the source of happiness because we have less entitlement, and we're more grateful and have an inner sense of happiness, and it's the foundation of many good deeds. Okay. Today we're going to talk about something that is a different chapter in the book. A topic that's a little bit easier to talk to than to implement sometimes. But it's an important topic, and it's the idea of forgiveness. Right? Topic we once had a whole series on a number of years back. Just want to revisit it. I think it's always good to revisit a topic like that and also add some maybe points that we didn't go through last time. Just by way of preface, it's interesting that in the book that we're basing this on, the chapter of Mechila, the chapter of forgiveness, comes right after the chapter of humility. And some of the commentaries point out because it has to go together. In other words, there cannot be forgiveness unless there's first humility. Because we talked about humility being the ability to expand, to give room for others, to not be trapped in ourselves and so on, right? So therefore, a person who's not humble, a person who is trapped in themselves, a person who's arrogant, or if we let our ego get in the way, it's actually very hard to forgive. In fact, almost possible to forgive, because then we're just very trapped in the fact that we were hurt, we were offended, we were not understood, or we were damaged, or whatever the case is. It's very hard to let go of anything, as we'll soon see. Now, it's important to understand that forgiveness is a hard thing to do. It's a very, very hard thing, even though it's a very beneficial thing to do, but it's a very hard thing to do. We also need to understand, and this is sometimes why it's hard, is we need to understand, just like humility, that forgiveness is a strength, not a weakness. And it also doesn't mean, and this is sometimes what stands in the way of forgiveness, it doesn't, and we'll talk about it a bit more later, it doesn't mean that we agree with what was done necessarily, right? You know, sometimes we can forgive others even though we still disagree with them and we still think what they did was wrong. And we'll see what forgiveness looks like in order to understand how that works. So let's start with a quote, one of the quotes in that chapter. It's a very interesting quote. It's actually a very cryptic quote. And it's a quote that some of the commentaries on this book need to sort of try and unravel what it means. Let's just do the quote first. He says like this. These are in Hebrew. Amar Chacham Mechila Naval Kfi Shagun LeNadiv, which means forgiveness to a naval, which means a low life. In other words, even if you forgive someone who's really low, is like what's appropriate and praiseworthy to the generous. What does that mean? What it means really is that forgiveness is a form of generosity sometimes. Why? Because particularly if it's forgiving someone who you really dislike and really is bad and really did something terrible to you, right? Because what he's saying is, if you ever look at someone who's truly generous, what does a truly generous person look like? A truly generous person looks like someone who can give generosity, can be kind to someone who doesn't deserve it. That's real generous. In other words, if I only share things, if I only give things to people who deserve it, that's not real generosity. Right? Chesed, real kindness, real generosity, a real generous nature means someone who's able just to freely give. Meaning, and including, that might mean giving to someone who doesn't deserve it. Or someone who, if you think about it rationally, I wouldn't give to. But because I have a generous nature, or those who have a generous nature would be able just to give freely. So he's saying the same thing has to be understood with regard to forgiveness. So it's a very powerful statement. In other words, forgiveness is something we need to aspire to give, even if it's someone who is what he refers to as an aval, which is a very strong language. It's a low life, yeah. It's like an aval means like it's related to that word, yeah. Right? So that's quite a strong statement. Now, obviously this needs to be developed, right? We need to first of all understand why that's so important. What does it mean to forgive someone who really doesn't deserve it? How do we achieve it? What are the steps we take to achieve difficult forgiveness? I mean, there's some forgivenesses which we can do easy. You know, a little bit of misunderstanding, God, because you have to apologize. Yeah, no problem. Finished, right? Which is also a powerful thing. But how do we achieve forgiveness when it's really, really hard? And why is it so important? So as we know, and this is something we talked about a number of years ago, that forgiveness is extremely powerful. And forgiveness is extremely beneficial, right? It's good for the one who is forgiven, obviously. But what we need to understand is particularly good for the one who forgives. In other words, when we forgive someone, it's not just we're doing that person a favor, we're doing ourselves a favor. Now, let's just break that down specifically. So first of all, for the one who's being forgiven, we have this incredible principle in the laws of Yom Kippur, right? Yom Kippur is a day of atonement. Day of forgiveness, when God forgives us and He atones for us anything we might have done wrong. And the Jewish law, the Shulchan Aruch, clearly states, based on the Talmud, that although we say that Yom Kippur wipes the slate clean and forgives and atones for all the sins that we might have done, it really only does it for the sins between us and God. Because for the sins that we have committed to others, Yom Kippur is what it says, I'm just quoting, Yom Kippur only really atones if we appease and seek forgiveness for those that we have hurt. Right? That's quite a powerful thing. It's not easy to ask for forgiveness. It's not easy to forgive, but it's also not easy to apologize. Both things are hard. Right? So therefore, it is really important to be forgiven. Right? If we think we've wronged someone else, it's a really important thing to be forgiven. Now, having said that, it's also extremely beneficial and powerful for the person who is forgiving. Now, we'll explain why in a minute, but that's based on a Talmud, and it's also, many of you would remember that we talked about the prayer of forgiveness that people say before they go to bed at night. But it's based on a story in the Talmud. The Talmud, in a particular section of the Talmud, is a very interesting section where the Talmud records about students that asked their teachers. There were some Talmudic sages who enjoyed longevity. They lived very long. And I guess in different times happened, but it was all collected in one sort of body of literature where the students asked their teachers who lived very long, "Bameh ha'arachta yamim," which means, what did you do to merit longevity? Was there some mitzvah you did? Was there some special thing you did? Was there some way you lived that you think brought you the blessing of longevity? So in a particular case, they asked, the Talmud says, Sha'alu Talmidavad Rabbi Nechunya ben Hakana. They asked a very great sage called Rabbi Nechunya ben Hakana. His name is Nechunya, the son of Hakana, which is a very, very famous sage, a great Kabbalist, a great Talmudist. And he lived in the Talmud, the Mishnah in the Talmud. And they said, Bameh ha'arachta yamim, on account of which good practice did you merit to have longevity? And he said the following. I'll just say all three, although I'm only going to focus on one. He said, first of all, in all my days, I never derived honor from the shame of someone else. Very powerful thing. It's a separate discussion, but sometimes people make themselves great on account of someone else's harm, right? He says, I never ever did that. Then he says, nor has my fellow's curse risen with me onto my bed, which we'll see what that means. And then he said a third thing about, he wasn't so particular with the, you know, he wasn't exact about getting every penny from everyone that owes him money, whatever the case is, he was more liberal with his money. That was the third thing. But that's a separate discussion what that means. But the Talmud then explains each one. And then when it comes to the second one, the Talmud says, what does it mean that he says, nor has my fellow's curse risen with me onto my bed? It's a very flowery way of saying something, right? So the Talmud says, yes, this is similar to what a different sage said. His name was Marzutra, and he said that he had a custom that when he would climb up onto his bed at night to sleep, he would always say, I am forgiving anyone who has aggravated me. So essentially, what the Talmud is saying, that this Rabbi Nechunya ben Hakana, what he meant with the second ingredient to his longevity, was the fact that he never went to sleep at night without forgiving anyone that needed to be forgiven. And he said, anyone who's pained me or aggravated me is forgiven. Which then resulted into the famous prayer of forgiveness that we mentioned before. There's a prayer, you can look in the Siddur. It is printed in most prayer books. Beautiful, beautiful prayer. It's printed in most prayer books. You can have a look in English, I think it's in the article too. In the Bedtime Shema. There's a section of the Siddur called the Bedtime Shema, which isn't only the Shema. It's also other passages of protection and spiritual protection that we recite before we go to sleep at night. And one of the prayers in that section called the Bedtime Shema is the prayer of forgiveness. Beautiful prayer. It starts by saying, Ribbono shel Olam, Master of the Universe, I hereby forgive all those that have wronged me and distressed me and insulted me. And it goes on and on and on. And in fact, it says, I even forgive those, just shows you how powerful forgiveness is. I even forgive those that might have harmed me unwittingly or even not knowingly, I don't even know about it. And I even forgive those that harmed me or were wronged me in a previous life. Right? We forgive that souls come back. Because, no, that's what it is. Because sometimes if there's resentment and there's pain and there's things, unresolved stuff, it can affect spiritually the person, right? And this is the power of this prayer of forgiveness. It's so important to forgive, to let go of all that stuff. The main point behind it all is the following. We've talked about at great length in other times. That is, putting it very simply, it's extremely unhealthy for a person to hang on to resentment. It's not good for us, right? If I resent someone, if I continuously remain upset with someone, which is often the case, sometimes it doesn't take one prayer of forgiveness to do this, but it might take a few. But letting go of resentment. Because hanging on to resentment, hanging on to hate, harms us, makes us angry. It is bad for us emotionally, it's bad for us spiritually, bad for us physically, right? You know, it doesn't bring happiness, it brings upsetness, and it's actually can harm a person to the point of harming a person physically. Whereas the concept of forgiveness is so powerful that it brings happiness, it brings blessing. It brings happiness to the person. When you let go of resentment, you feel freer. Right? As I've mentioned to you many times, or by Dr. Tversky's phrase, that we need to not let people live in our mind rent-free, right? When they've long forgotten about it. Someone offends me and I walk around for 6 weeks trying to replay in my mind exactly what happened and why do they say that and what kind of chutzpah they have. If I ever see them again, and I'll give them all that kind of stuff, right? They've forgotten about it a long time ago. Yeah. They're enjoying life and they're living in your head, right? Yeah. And it's bad for us. It's actually physically, spiritually, and emotionally bad for us. And that's why forgiveness, as we'll see, because that was forgiveness, a big part of it, is such an important thing. Incidentally, just the interesting thing, I saw a commentary on this piece of the Talmud. Why did this particular sage wait till the night to forgive? Why didn't he just forgive them right away? Like if someone offended him at 10 o'clock in the morning, Why don't you just think to yourself, I forgive you and finish. Why do you have to wait till the night time, right? Now, it's very important to do it at night. The idea of doing it at night is because we shouldn't go to sleep, right? Particularly, we shouldn't end the day and go to sleep with hate or resentment. Because when we sleep, things descend from the conscious to the subconscious. And then we have suppressed memories. And then there's unresolved stuff living in us in a very, very deep way, even after we forgot about it, right? It's not a good thing. As we know, today's psychological research, we know how this works. There's a lot of stuff that can be in the recesses of our mind and our consciousness, which you don't even know about, that could surface a lot later, right? But the question is, okay, so we understand why it's important to do it before you go to sleep, and why then you do it right away. And this particular commentary says one of the reasons is because he thought maybe the person would first apologize. Now, when a person apologizes, it's much easier to forgive. In other words, when you forgive, you want to try and do it sincerely as possible, right? It's much easier to do that, and it's much more beneficial for the person who has wronged me, for both of us, if they actually apologize, right? If he came and he went to sleep and no one apologized, there was no call of apology, so he had no choice, he had to forgive them without them asking for it, which is also a good thing. But that's why the commentary explained, that's why he waited till the night time, and I guess hence, that's the concept of the prayer of forgiveness. I saw, as I was preparing this and I was looking for different stuff, I came across a couple of videos. Some of them I'm going to show you, but I'll just tell you the story. There's a guy called Yoel Gold, that some of you might be familiar with him. He has these, it's a rabbi, he lives in Israel, I don't know where he lives, in America or Israel. And he's made it his business to collect amazing stories from people. And it's very beautiful because he actually does a lot of research and then interviews the people. Like, he doesn't just hear, say a story and then repeat it, because half the stories you hear often are fabrications, but he actually he interviews people and it's very real and it's very good. So just tell you about just a nice story, but it's of how difficult forgiveness can be, but what kind of blessing it could bring. So he tells a story about a couple. It's an Israeli couple, David and Tamar, which he interviews on the video. They got engaged around Hanukkah time before COVID hit. And they were supposed to, their wedding was supposed to be in Israel just before Pesach, but then COVID started to surface. And things started to change. So, they had planned a big wedding and all that. And so they decided to get married like a month before. By that time, regulations had changed. So, they redid the whole thing. Only invited close family and a limited amount of people. And they took a much smaller hall. And they actually kept the regulations, whatever the regulations at the time were. Those who remember the beginning of COVID, no one even knew what was going on or what the regulations were. But they tried their best. And they kept the regulations. And the wedding was going beautifully. Suddenly, in the middle of the wedding, someone comes in and says, the police are outside. Okay, so the chatana, the kala, the bride and the groom, they figure, you know what, let's just go out and clarify this. They took a walk outside just to be able to tell them they're doing. Anyway, the police were irate and they didn't even let them talk, and it was a really ugly scene. And again, not judging the police, of course, but I mean, you know, at that time, everyone was just very nervous. And they started to scream at them and they said, everyone should go home and disperse, otherwise it'll be a 50,000 shekel, 5,000 shekel fine or something. And anyway, there was real chaos. Bottom line is people dispersed, they were scared, and the wedding was absolutely ruined. To the point that they couldn't even bench and have Shabbat Barachot, they had to ask a few people from the street just to make up a minion so they could finish off. And they were traumatized. They were really, really upset. The wedding day for a bride and groom is an important day. And for a number of months, it was really upsetting for them. And to the point that she says in the video that even when the pictures came, she found it hard to look at the wedding pictures because it would just bring up the whole thing again. It was just very, very, very upsetting. The night before Yom Kippur, this is about 8 months later, not the night before, a few days before Yom Kippur, the father of the groom gets a call. He gets a call from a yeshiva bacher. And he says, yes, how can I help you? He says, I'm calling you. I want you to know that I was the one who called the police. I ruined the wedding. So he gets a big shock. And he says, okay, so what do you want from me? He says, listen, I want to tell you something. He said, at that time, there was a lot of, you know, chaos around, a lot of uncertainty around. I heard music. And I didn't know that people were actually keeping the regulations. I didn't bother to find out. And I was the one that called the police. And I feel terrible about it. And he says, I actually think that it's harmed me spiritually even. He says, because I'm of age. Now, if you understand the world of Shaduchim, this makes sense. It's already been 8 months trying very hard to find a Shidduch. I'm a decent boy. I'm a good boy in the yeshiva. And I haven't had one suggestion. There's something blocking me. And I reflected and I feel that I feel this is something I need to fix. I'm calling you to please contact the groom and the bride, and ask them to apologize, and ask them, tell them I'm apologizing, and I'm asking them for forgiveness. So the father calls his son, and as the son takes the phone, the wife is sitting there. You can see that her husband is becoming really, like, he's agitated, and he's like, because the whole thing came up again. And then, so the father tells him, this is what happened. This is what the guy called. I can give you his number. I can give him your number, whatever. And I just want to know if you're up to this. So he said, I need to think about it. Because the truth is that forgiveness is not just saying something I forgive. You need to actually, forgiveness is something, it's a process. You need to actually go through it. You need to kind of mean it to some degree. We'll see what that means in a minute, but you have to mean it, right? So they put down the phone and they looked at each other, and the whole thing came back again, and all the hurt and everything. And they started to discuss it, and after, it took them a couple of days. It took them till the Motzei Shabbos, till the Saturday night before Yom Kippur, because Yom Kippur was a Monday or something, to actually decide that they're ready for it. They're ready to say, we forgive. He calls his father and said, give me the number. Give him my number. And when the guy calls, I have a conversation, he tried to excuse, he says, I'm not excusing myself, I'm just giving you the background. And I'm really asking for your forgiveness and for your wife's forgiveness. So he puts it on speakerphone, and they both told him, and they said, yes, we're ready to do it, and we forgive. And she says that after that, they actually felt really, really good. So they felt that sort of let go of a tremendous burden. The story continues. I guess this is up to interpretation, but this is the way the girl interpreted it, and the couple. A couple of days later, after Yom Kippur, the husband gets a call that his wife, who was then 6 months pregnant, had a bad car accident. So he rushes off to the hospital, and she's in a certain hospital, and she rushes off to the, and rushes off to the hospital. They come into the room, and he sees his wife is fine. The doctors come in, they have the report of the accident, and the doctors say to them, someone's looking after you. Like, this was absolutely miraculous. The way that the way the accident happened, the airbag was supposed to jump out, which in some cases is a good thing, but in her case, it would have been a terrible thing, being how pregnant she was. And could have killed the baby and could have been really damaged her. And nothing happened to her, which they attribute to the fact, to the blessing of forgiveness. So they forget, I mean, the accident obviously was destined to happen, but the power of forgiveness brought so much blessing. This is the way they understood it, that it brought about the thing. What the story doesn't tell is that the other guy get married. I'm supposed he did eventually, but I'm sure he did. Anyway, that's just an interesting... No, but I brought the story also because it is a hard thing. You can imagine, if someone's done such a terrible thing to you, I'm not talking about someone who says a not nice thing to you, you know, it looks at you the wrong way. That's a really... You should have bothered to find out what's going on. You should have bothered to find out that they're keeping the rules, right? And he really ruined the wedding. I mean, that's a traumatic thing. But that, yet they were able to bring themselves to forgive. Now,
can I just ask a please. Question? So what if the second party, the couple, didn't want to forgive? So they don't want to forgive.
So it's interesting. That question is asked. I'll tell you where it's discussed. It's asked in the laws of Yom Kippur. Let's say I've done something wrong to someone, right? And I want to ask for forgiveness because I really want my... I want to clear myself, right?
Yes.
And I'm going to see it. So the Talmud tells us that it's really important to forgive. So it's really important to ask for forgiveness, but it's also important to forgive. One shouldn't be cruel. So like with Yom Kippur, it says, let's say you really wronged someone, and now I come Yom Kippur, and the Torah tells us I'm not going to be forgiven unless I ask for forgiveness. And I go ask forgiveness, God says, no, you hurt me too much, right? So then, it says you're supposed to try like 3 times, and after that, you don't have to worry about it anymore. If you sincerely want forgiveness, you've done what you need to do. We're not angels. We all make mistakes. Part of our mistakes that we make is that we do hurt other people, right? So as important as it is for them to forgive, but it's also important for us to ask for forgiveness, but we need to do it sincerely. And if we've done it a number of times and can't, it's hard to ask for forgiveness. It's not an easy thing to do, right? So if we've done our duty, then God takes care of the rest. Then it's not our problem anymore, right? Provided it's done sincerely. But let's just, it'll become clearer in a minute, because let's just break this down a little bit. Because what does forgiveness, what does it mean to forgive? Like, what does it mean a couple forgave? I mean, they were still hurt from the fact that their wedding was ruined, I imagine, right? So, first of all, let's understand what it doesn't mean, okay? It doesn't mean condoning the behavior. That's not what forgiveness means. It sometimes could mean that, because sometimes forgiveness, part of the process could mean when you have a conversation trying to understand where the person came from, and maybe part of forgiveness could sometimes be that I realize that I misjudged the person. That could also be. But it doesn't have to be that, right? It could very well be that what the person did to me was absolutely wrong, right? It also doesn't necessarily mean restoring the relationship. Because sometimes that thing that the person did that is absolutely wrong continues to do, right? It continues to do that. Because if a person continuously offends me or continuously harasses me, I can forgive, I can be humble like we spoke about last week. It doesn't mean I have to live with them. It doesn't mean I have to continuously be their friend and go out for coffee for them every week, because I don't have to open myself up to that kind of nonsense, right? So forgiving doesn't necessarily mean restoring the relationship. And sometimes not only doesn't mean that, it shouldn't mean that. Because sometimes things are toxic and sometimes we need to protect ourselves, which is fine. But there's some level of forgiveness that is always possible. And that's where this slide comes in. This is based on an essay from the Lubavitcher Rebbe who discusses forgiveness in detail. And part of it, he says the following. He says there are actually three levels of forgiveness. There's the basic level of forgiveness which is expected from everyone. There's a second level of forgiveness which we should all aspire to. And then there's a third level of forgiveness which isn't always possible. So he says the first level of forgiveness is where at least we don't wish any bad on the other person. The other person hurt me, damaged me even, but I don't want to take revenge. I don't want bad to happen to them. Now, although this sounds easy, it's not always that easy. You know, because you find sometimes people are very hurt and they say, no, I wish them well, but I don't want to talk to them anymore, right? And then something happens to the other person, so you say, well, you know. Yeah. Goes round, comes round, you know, all that kind of stuff. Right? So it means that I'm talking about a sincere, not for me, I am angry at the person, but I don't, at least I can let go to some degree where I don't wish any bad upon that person. And that's supposed to be something which everyone is supposed to be able to achieve. And the Talmud and the commentary say if we can't achieve that, that's a little bit of an insensitivity, a little bit of a cruelty. Because that's just revenge, and wishing someone bad on someone else is never a good thing. The second level of forgiveness, and I think this is the main one to understand, right? Which is something which is hard, but we all need to aspire to. And that is this concept of this prayer of forgiveness before we go to sleep. As we said before, it's letting go of resentment. In other words, I can't be that person's friend like I was before. I can't have the same relationship with that person as I did before. But I've let go. I don't agree with what they did. I think it's still wrong, maybe. I don't contain such behavior. I don't want to have a relationship with someone that engages in that behavior. But I've let go. That's a process. It takes time. We'll talk about some strategies in a moment. But it's letting go of resentment. It's letting go of anger. Which is the most liberating and most beneficial thing that we can do for ourselves to forgive in that way. The third is to actually restore the relationship. Now that's harder and sometimes possible, but not even always possible. So that's a high level of forgiveness, which not everyone is expected. When we talk about the prayer of forgiveness before we go to sleep at night, that's not about restoring relationships necessarily. That's about more the second one, the learning to let go, not to go to sleep with anger, not to go to sleep with hate, to let go. Now, sometimes that's easier, sometimes that's very difficult, as we'll soon see. All right? I'm going to show another story from that. I just happened to see three stories. This one I'm going to actually show you. I hope the sound is good. If not, I'll explain it afterwards. But this is someone who let go and moved on in a very extreme case, which I would never judge anyone who didn't move on from that. But he did. On some level, didn't go to number three. Didn't restore relationship, obviously. But you'll see in a second why. But did remove a level of hate, at least, which was amazing. And that's kind of something which you all have to aspire to in cases where it's even easier.
He was visiting day camp Chedlo, and 12-year-old Yocheva Brookstein's parents and grandparents came up to spend the day with her.
Every summer, my grandparents would come with my parents to visit us, and I looked forward to it the entire time I was in camp. I was in my bunkhouse with my mother, my grandmother, my sister, and my grandfather and father were walking through the path of camp. And as they were walking through the camp, they saw another older man walking by them. And my father noticed my grandfather nod in acknowledgement to this elderly man.
father-in-law, who knew all of his father's acquaintances, friends, everybody in his life, said, who's that man?
So he said, that was my best friend from before the war. I said, your best friend from before the war? Introduce me, I'd like to meet him. I said, no, it's better that we don't meet.
And my father pressed him, said, I really would like to know what's going on or what's the story.
Why don't you go over to him and hug him and speak to him, see how he's doing?
And my father then went on to tell me why he's not introducing me to him.
My grandfather lived in Romania at the time, right before the Romanians were being deported. He had this very close friend. He and his friend learned together, spent a lot of time together, and his friend asked him, you know, what are you doing for your family? How are you saving them? How are you getting out? And my grandfather, who had foresight, had secured visas for himself and his wife and his child and his in-laws. And he told his friend, I actually have visas, we're getting out, and I put them in a hiding spot.
The next day, I went to look for those visas, and Robbie, they were gone. And so was my friend with his entire family.
He knew he hadn't told anybody else. Only the two of them knew about this particular area. He was deported to Auschwitz with his family. They were all killed. He survived. We heard subsequently that this man had made it to the other side of Romania and had survived the war with his family and made his way to America.
Robbie was shocked. He said, Dad, because of him, your wife, your child, and your in-laws were killed in Auschwitz. Before I asked you, why don't you hug him? Now I'm asking you, how can you even look at him?
So Robbie, let it go. I said, what do you mean let it go? What do you mean let it go? I can't believe it. Just listen to me, he said. It was a different time. It was a different place. People were under tremendous pressures. Everybody was looking out to do what they can to survive. It's over. There's nothing I can do about it. We have to go on.
We've all experienced the pain of being hurt by someone else. The first step in resolving conflict and letting go of resentment is learning to be curious about the other person's experience. Asking questions like, what triggered them to act insensitively? And are they going through something difficult in their life that I don't know about?
My father understood what had propelled this man to do what he did. Did he forgive him? He had killed his family, and this man's family had survived. It's hard to forgive somebody for something like that. But he understood what he had done. And he was able to go forward.
He let go of the past. He lived life moving forward. There's no point to holding on to hurt or to anger. The only one you hurt in that process is yourself, not anyone else.
So that's an extreme thing. I mean, that's like a high level, right? But that's exactly what the second level of forgiveness is. I mean, he couldn't go to the third. I mean, obviously, he couldn't be his friend again. He was his best friend before the war. And understandably, you would never be able to do that. But he let go, which is phenomenal. I tell the story for two reasons. First of all, because, you know, you always tell, I mentioned this before, we always tell extreme stories. Why do I tell extreme stories? Because our circumstances might not be as extreme. But if people can do this in extreme circumstances, then we need to understand that we need to aspire to do it in less extreme circumstances. And just to learn to let go. But the other point is, in terms of strategy, as he mentioned at the end of the video, Rabbi Gold, that sometimes you don't have to agree with what the person did, but it helps, in order to let go of resentment, it helps at least to understand. Not agree, understand. That's a very big difference. Right? It's true in all areas of relationships, by the way. We don't always have to agree with other people, we just have to listen and understand them. And in forgiveness, understanding really helps, because even when you still say, but I would never do a thing like that, and in this extreme circumstances, many wouldn't have done that. But at least you get a context. Like even if someone, you know, I've been asked, I'll give you an example. I've been asked many times about the laws of honoring parents for parents who are abusive, right? Person, child goes up in a very, I'm not even talking about sexual abuse, I mean just generally abusive, right? Person grows up in a family, maybe parent, a mother, a father, or both that are extremely cruel and abusive, and there was a toxic environment, and so on and so forth. So how do you move on? So first of all, in context of the laws of honoring parents, so it's perfectly okay for, as they grow up and have their own children, to create boundaries and to create a distance. But nevertheless, parents are still parents, and the Talmud says, and the Lord tells us that actually you not have to honor them actively as normal children do to parents, but you can't do anything to harm them. Secondly, you do need to find some level of forgiveness. Now, how do you forgive someone who ruined your childhood? And one of the ways to let go is at least not to agree with them, but to understand them. In other words, understand what background they might have had, where they grew up, where perhaps therapy wasn't an option, or people weren't aware of their own emotions and things like that. Understanding someone often allows us to let go of the hate. Not to agree, not to have anything majorly to do with them necessarily, but let go of the resentment. And that's the crux, that's the core of the concept of mechila, the concept of forgiveness. Here's some other strategies. I'm just mentioning a few that I've written about, and I'll go through them. First of all, it's very important not to pretend that you weren't hurt, because then you just carry it around with you. Letting go of resentment, like in everything, like in every grief and pain and things like that, letting go of something means you first have to acknowledge that it's there, right? You know, people say that's gone through a traumatic experience or someone really hurt them. I'm fine. It's like a shikra. It's like a drunk saying, I'm not drunk. You know what I'm saying? It's like, you're not fine. It's hard. It might take you a bit of time. And it's okay. Take your time. I mean, we have the prayer of forgiveness every night. So, okay, maybe it takes, like I said, maybe it takes 10 prayers. You know, but acknowledge that it's there, because when you acknowledge that it's there, it's easier to then do something with it or do what you want to do with it, which is to let it go. The second thing is an amazing idea which I saw somewhere about growing from the pain, which means, let's say someone was really insensitive to you, right? One of the ways to learn to let go of it is to channel it into something positive, which means to think to myself, how can I grow from that experience? Like, I was really hurt, which means people, when they say things to other people which are insensitive, can be very hurtful. So I now need to be very careful about how I talk to people. I need to reflect of how I treat other people. Often we get very hurt from others, but when you think about it, maybe we do the same thing to others, right? So, you know, in other words, very, very often growth comes from learning, not from people who can tell you what to do, but from people who can demonstrate what not to do, right? And those people can sometimes be the biggest teachers. And when they are, we have to appreciate the teacher. And when we appreciate the teacher, it's easier to get to let go of the resentment, right? In other words, you channel the pain in a way, well, it was hurtful, but what can I do about it? At least I can learn something from it. So I acknowledge, at least I learned something from that person. That's like what not to do, but at least I've grown from that experience. The other strategy is quite a hard one, right? It says, and it goes, if you see number three, it says, the quote is from this book, Mechal al Shaharlach, forgive someone that has wronged you, and give to those who have held back from you. This is an incredible concept. That if you really want to forgive, you know, the power of action is tremendous, right? We've talked about this many, many times. We talked about the famous idea that the heart follows the action, the heart follows the behavior. So when we do something, it draws our heart into that action, right? This is the power of action. Which is why, you've probably heard it from me many times already, but this is why I get so upset when I hear some modern stuff about not imposing on kids like to share and things like that, right? Because it's nonsense, because you do. That's why we train children to do things that are uncomfortable, even though they don't understand it, right? I'm only saying, because I just read another article recently about this, about someone engaging in a parenting thing where I don't want to impose on my child to share their toys because I want them to wait till they're ready and they can learn it on their own. Well, good news for you, they're not going to learn it on their own. Right? They're not going to learn it on their own because we all have egos, and children are born with a huge ego, which you hope they're going to outgrow one day, right? Why are they born with a huge ego? Because for the first part of their life, they're supposed to be discovering themselves, and it's our job to teach them values. And one of the ways we do that is to make them practice values, right? This nonsense about, it's become so extreme now, about, you know, children also need boundaries and all this kind of stuff. You know, it's not enough that adults are creating boundaries all day and protecting themselves and taking care of themselves. Now we need children to do the same thing, right? That's really going to destroy that generation. So, no, we say to a child, respectfully and nicely and lovingly, you play, but your sister also wants to play with it. Say in 5 minutes, you're going to give it to her for 5 minutes. And they're going to kick and scream, and that's fine. Why is it fine? Because that's what's going to teach them to feel it. Because the heart follows the actions. And the same thing is true, and this is what the author of the book is telling us, the same thing is true with forgiveness. If you really want to get let go of resentment and you want to forgive someone and you're finding it hard, do something for that person. Actually, actively do something for that person. Be kind to that person within the reasonable realms of how it's possible. And we learn this from none other of someone that we've spoken about many times is Joseph. Joseph and his brothers. Right? Joseph and his brothers did this all the time. We know one of the greatest models of forgiveness in the Torah is Joseph. Who, don't forget, as a 70-year-old boy, was kidnapped by his brothers, thrown into a pit of snakes and scorpions, and sold as a slavery into Egypt. Right? So the many reasons how Joseph reached forgiveness, one of them is by repaying kindness and not bad and not evil. Not only didn't he take revenge, he did the opposite. In fact, one of the stories is when he sent his brothers back to bring Binyamin, the youngest one who didn't come with the 10 brothers, he kept Shimon back, one of the brothers. On the surface, he was keeping him back as a ransom. He said, you go get the youngest one, Binyamin, and I'm keeping Shimon prisoner. And the Talmud discusses, why did he keep Shimon prisoner? So what happened was, the Midrash tells us, the background story is this. When they threw him into the pit, the worst culprit was Shimon. He threw stones after him and boulders after him. So Yosef kept him, and while the brothers were away getting Binyamin, he entertained him, and he wined and dined him, and he made banquets for him, and he was absolutely incredibly kind to him. Why? Because he was the one that he probably should have hated the most. And he didn't want to hate. And that's why a great strategy of forgiveness is, if we find it out, it's a hard thing to let go of resentment. One of the ways is actually do a kindness to the person. Call them up on their birthday, wish them a happy birthday. Help them with something they can be helped with. That kind of thing. When you help someone, then you're drawn to them and it's easier to let go of the hate. Another very important one is faith. Right? Which is another thing we see from Joseph. One of the things of faith is that at the end of the day, something that happened to me was meant to happen to me. Right? Everything is ashkha pratet. And when we really believe that, if we don't believe, it's very hard to actually really forgive without faith. Why? Because at the end of the day, you're such a low life. How could you have done that to me? But if I believe that everything happens for a reason, as Yosef did, and he told it to his brothers, when he revealed himself to his brothers, they were petrified of him. They thought he was going to harm them. Right? And he said, Al te'atzfu, do not be sad, do not be afraid. Because I sincerely believe that I landed up in Egypt for a reason. Ultimately, everything happens for a reason because there's a famine in the land. And I was able to give Pharaoh the advice to store up produce and so on and so forth. And now I'm able to sustain you and my family and everyone else in Egypt. So, you did the wrong thing. You did the wrong thing because it was your choice. But in terms of where I am, as we've spoken about this before, in terms of where I am, I believe that where I am is where I'm meant to be. And if this happened to me, it's for my growth. And if this happened to me, it's for a purpose. God would not let it happen to me if it wasn't meant to happen to me. That, as we've explained many, many times, that doesn't mean that you're a good guy because you threw me in the pit. No. And we know from the Talmud and many, many places in our early literature that there was many things that happened even in future generations, that the souls of the 10 brothers who sold Joseph into slavery had to be rectified and elevated, and the tshuvah, it was a very long process. In fact, we have a story, the 10 martyrs which were killed in the times of the Romans, the Kabbalists tell us were actually the 10 souls of these 10 brothers who still didn't have a tikkun, they still didn't have a rectification because they had done what they had done, right? And they still needed to be elevated and rectified and forgiven from God and so on and so forth. And that's why they had to go through so many evolutions of forgiveness and what we call in Kabbalistic language, tikkunim, rectifications. But in terms of Joseph's perspective, that was there because they made a bad choice. But in terms of Joseph's perspective, he had to believe, and he did believe, that wherever he landed up and how he landed up was meant to be and for a purpose. And that makes it so much easier then to give up resentment and to give up hate and not to walk around with hate. I mean, again, I think that's extremely brought out in the story I showed you before because, I mean, the evil of the things that happened during the Holocaust, but even the evil of things that people did to survive, and we know there were many. Now, we don't like to talk about them, but they were. There were many evil things that people did.
Sorry, I can't ask if that movie that you showed us and the wedding, it was all meant to be.
Correct. Yeah. So you have to, right, I mean, you have to believe that. That's a hard thing to come close to sometimes, right? Mm. And I'm sure that guy who said, let's move on, in that story, I'm sure it came to good with faith, a lot of faith, that he was... it was hard for him still to be friends with that person, because even though it was his best friend, because he made a choice, and it's hard for him to be able to restore that relationship when a person made a choice to do something that would harm his own wife and kids. But I guess he had to put that together with the fact that ultimately that was the plan. For reasons we don't understand. We often don't understand God's plan. And he rebuilt his family, which was probably the plan, which was obviously the plan. Again, it's hard to talk about these things because those are extreme things which we can never ever find the reason for, because we don't know. We don't understand.
But he comes back to white bad things.
Yes, exactly. And often it's just about accepting that we don't know.
But he clearly not slept it all those years, because when he saw him, it wasn't like he had that. He'd let it go.
No, he let it go before. And that's why he's able to greet him. Yeah, he's able to greet him.
A huge example of forgiveness recently was that woman who lost those four children.
Yeah. Couple.
Couple.
I forgot the name. I actually wrote it down, and I left my paper that I wrote down. I was watching some of the videos yesterday. Tremendous. It's unbelievable. It's unbelievable. It's unbelievable. Yeah, it is unbelievable. Yeah. Correct, and that's, I think, it's part of the understanding. Right, that's what we said before, part of forgiving of understanding. Maybe you thought, maybe I would have done the same thing in that context. Correct. And maybe that was part of the process of how he was able to let go. Correct. Because that's the point. That's the depth. I always say this, that's the depth behind this prayer of forgiveness, right? When I go to sleep at night, if I really forgive someone, they don't even know about it. But it's good for me, because I need to let go. Yeah. That's the point, right?
Yeah. But I think when you say something with them, when you find them up and say, forgive you, then they want to pursue the friendship, and you don't want to. And that's the hard
thing. Okay, so sometimes you have to be honest. You say, listen, I'm not ready yet. You know, the guy might say, yes, I forgive you, let's go out for coffee tomorrow morning. You might say, listen, I'm not quite there yet, but... okay. So you have to be honest. But the letting go is the main... This letting go is hard... But so important. That's why we need to have faith. That we need to also understand the other person. All these things, all these strategies are very, very important. One other thing, and I'm going to show you one more story. One other strategy is, you know, sometimes asking, this is more about asking for forgiveness. It's interesting. Or being asked for forgiveness, right? Or to bring about for forgiveness. You know, often when there's a conflict between two people, both people become hurt because... Very often, it's not all cases. Very often, we both participated. Right? We both. I'm going to show you a story in a second. It's a stupid story, but it has a beautiful ending. Right? And sometimes by recognizing, like sometimes people don't ask for, I don't apologize because I didn't do anything wrong. The other person was wrong. And maybe you're right. But maybe there's a small part that you did, right? And sometimes, maybe I didn't do anything wrong, but I still hurt the person. Right? I remember, again, I only tell you stories that worked, right? But I remember once apologizing to someone. Just to make sure. Everything, I'm a perfect person because I'm definitely very far from it. But I once apologized to someone for hurting them. And I did hurt them. Until today, I think they were wrong. In other words, I didn't have a choice. But I didn't mean to hurt them. Right? And it was a moral issue and I stood up for something, whatever the case was. And I, in the process, hurt someone, which probably was inevitable under the circumstances. But I realized afterwards, but I still hurt them. Right? So I eventually called them up and I said, listen, I really didn't mean to hurt you and I just want to apologize for hurting you. I didn't go into the details that I probably didn't have a choice, but I still wanted to, I wanted to seek that forgiveness, and the person was amazingly accommodating. Mm-hmm. And I have a very good relationship with that person till today. I mean, he didn't talk to me for a year, but afterwards, it's like today, it's like we're very friendly.
How long did you wait before you called? I'm just interested.
No. So, there was a story about the timing of the calling. No, so I waited a while because I knew from the beginning he wouldn't even want to take my call. So, and I waited until I got an indication through someone else that he actually was waiting for me to apologize. So that's the case, I'm going to do it.
Wow. Okay.
So timing is also an important thing.
You've got a heads up.
So it's about sometimes just recognizing, and even if you didn't think you did anything wrong, but recognize you hurt the person, and maybe then that person might apologize for what they did sometimes. As in the next story. Listen to this story. It's a funny ending. It's a beautiful ending.
Can you put the volume up? Parking?
Forget it. If you live there, you know
it's about New York.
It takes forever to find the spot. So when Harry Ashkenazi pulled up to the Chinese auction on King's Highway, he knew no matter the cost, ballet is worth every dollar. He pulled up to the car in front of him and waited patiently. But after a few minutes of waiting and not moving, Harry stuck his head out the window and noticed that the couple in the car in front of him, who he recognized as Nancy and Jack Beta, were schmoozing with an old friend standing next to their car.
While we were waiting, one of our friends was crossing the street, so we stopped to say hello to them, a couple, and we were talking to them for a little while.
Harry honked softly, tried to get their attention, but Nancy and Jack kept on schmoozing.
And I continued to gently honk. No response. So I was thinking, well, I know there's a lot of retail stores here. Maybe they're not going to the Chinese auctions. So I pull around, give my car to valet, and my wife and I go up to the Chinese auction.
10 minutes later, Harry was having a good time with his friends in the hall.
They turn around, and they see a couple beelining towards me, not happy at all.
When they approached him, Nancy let him have it.
Told him, Harry, that really wasn't a very nice thing to do.
She told him how inconsiderate and rude he was for cutting them off, especially because he took the last spot in valet, and they were forced to park 3 blocks away.
I was annoyed, and I felt it was very, very gutsy to do something like that. At least give us a honk, warn us that you're going to go around us.
Nothing that I said, of course, could calm them down, and they walked away, again in the huff and puff, and I felt terrible.
Fast forward 5 months later, Nancy's in her house. She gets a call. Erev Yom Kippur.
I was surprised. It was like 9 o'clock in the morning. He said, Harry Ashkenazi, go, whoa. And I wasn't going to be rude to hang up the phone on him because he is a person in the community that we could have interactions with. And I just was happy to hear what he had to say.
Harry explained to her that every Erev Yom Kippur, he sits down and tries to think back if there's anyone who might have been hurt by something he said or did.
You remember many months ago, we had an issue. I thought I took your spot. And I know you and Jack were very angry. I understand it. And I want to ask for forgiveness.
And I said, of course, please forgive me for the way I spoke to you. Let it be forgotten. He says, fine, no problem. We hung up, and it was right before Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. We felt it was like the right thing to do. We were both very happy that it was aired out.
A few years later, Nancy received a call from a shatzer who was suggesting a shidduch for her son David. When Nancy heard the name of the girl, her heart skipped a beat. Lorraine Ashkenazi, Harry's daughter.
And they looked at each other and said, we have no problem with that. We'd love her to be our daughter-in-law.
A few months later, David Begin and Lorraine Ashkenazi got married. Nancy and Harry were officially family.
I was told to my wife, and I said, Jamie, imagine if that call wasn't made. They had a right to say, wow, Harry and Jamie Ashkenazi, but David wasn't right. That's not the type of character we want in our family. We're blessed now because of that Erev Kippur called Es Mechila.
But the story doesn't end here. After David and Lorraine got married and settled in Lakewood, another important shidduch happened as a result of Harry's call. I know the couple personally. They live in Los Angeles. Their names? Yoel and Rachel Gold.
That's it.
My shidduch. When David was in Lakewood, he learned there in yeshiva. Sat next to me, got to know me, and somehow managed to convince my wife to marry me. Without David and Lorraine's efforts, I would probably not be married to my wife today.
What started off as a phone call many, many years ago ended up not only having the David Beta family, but having the Yellow Gold family.
Very nice.
So, you know why it's a brilliant story? Because it's like such a silly thing. But that's what happens with silly things. And when he asked for forgiveness, she realized she wasn't that nice either. I mean, she had spoken, because he hadn't really done anything wrong, because he had tried to honk, she hadn't heard the honk, obviously. And that's how things escalate, right? So he actually did. He apologized, which means he took some responsibility. He didn't think he did anything wrong, because he did try to.
Yeah.
But he hurt them, so he called up. And then that just cleared the air. She apologized back. I mean, the other stuff is a bonus part of the story, but it's a beautiful ending. But it is like that, because otherwise, you know, that you get a perception of the person that grows in you, such a terrible person, such a rude person, and then, you know, they wouldn't have accepted such a shidduch. But the power of forgiveness. So those are just some of the concepts that come out from this chapter on Mechila, and next 2 weeks we'll do some other chapters.
Thank you.
Have a wonderful day.